dosing explained, minimum versus optimal dosing for bone and brain health. Hi, I'm Dr. Valerie Davidson from Progress Your Health.
And I'm Dr. Robert Mackey from Progress Your Health. So we just had our Progress Your Hormones community launch wrap up, the first official one. This will probably be, the week of the August 18th, and we just closed it on August 17th. So how do you feel about our launch?
Oh my goodness, it was so exciting. In fact, you just talking about it, my hands are kind of sweating.
Yeah.
But it was a lot, but I think we have a really nice warm group of brilliant women, which I can't wait to get started because the Progress Your Hormones community is brand spanking new. So it's pretty incredible. But as of now, when you watch this, our enrollment is closed. So I'm not sure when we're going to open it up. We probably have a waiting list maybe, but I'm ready to get into the nitty gritty.
Yeah. It was our first official, community launch. It is a long time in the making. There's a lot to it. Which is probably why it's taken us so long to launch it, because it's not, there's some marketing, there's some technology, there's sort of a lot of moving parts, but it's launched and we're really excited. And, so keep paying attention. We'll let you know when you have a better idea when it's going to reopen, sort of for the next group of people that want to join and participate. So. Now, the question we have today is from a comment we received on one of our, I think, two episodes ago. Mm-hmm. It's biased in the title. I don't remember exactly what it is, but it's two episodes ago. We are talking about bias dosing. The question I thought was a really good one. I wrote back a comment to it, and I said, this needs to be, at least one of our next few episodes, because she asked the question, like, how do you know what optimal dosing actually is?
No, this is an awesome question. So that's why I was so excited. I have it all written down. So I'm going to read the comment.
Sure.
So it says, why would we benefit or want from the minimum amount of estrogen for long-term bone and brain health? That seems like the equivalent of taking a half a Tylenol for a headache. I saw on a podcast that the minimum estradiol levels for a cycling female are over 100 for the majority of the cycle. So it's confusing on why we would want to be below that number if we're trying to restore our hormones for optimal benefit. And so I got excited by the question because there's so many levels to kind of unwrap on this. Is that, so I wrote back and then she wrote back, there is so much info out there in the menoverse, love it, right now about optimal dosing. Everyone seems to have good points for their position, and it's so hard to know what we should aim for if we want long-term health benefits of HRT. It seems that many women are getting the minimum dosing of estrogen, just enough to keep the hot flashes at bay, but where does that leave them 20 years from now? Love your videos. Keep them coming.
Well, I can see why she's confused because, mm-hmm. I mean, honestly, she really sort of hones in on exactly the right question.
Absolutely.
Right? That's why when I read it to you, I'm like, look at this one. Yeah. And you're like, yeah, we got to do that one. Mm-hmm. Because there's not one approach of hormone replacement that is going to do exactly what she's asking, right? You have to use the hormone replacement vehicle or dosing strategy or amount or whatever you want to call it that is going to achieve the results based on that particular patient.
Well, the way that I kind of took away from this is mm-hmm. really more about dosing women that are in perimenopause versus menopause. So if you're in menopause, the ovaries have started to cease to, they're not producing any more estrogen and progesterone. Mm-hmm. But if you're in perimenopause, you might be producing erratic levels of estrogen and then lower progesterone. So that's where some of the differentiation comes in. And then, so she is right. A cycling female that's, a 28-day cycle, they are having levels of estradiol over 100. But it changes around. Same with progesterone. If you're a cycling female, you may not make progesterone until you ovulate, which is when you make progesterone. So treating someone to back up to kind of tease this apart a little bit, is a cycling female, they need to have the ebbs and flows of the estrogen and progesterone, mm-hmm. and they're going to go up. Estrogen on day 12 is the highest it's ever going to be, and then progesterone on day 21 is the highest it's going to be. Mm-hmm. But when you're treating a menopausal female and you're trying to keep those levels of estradiol over 100 consistently, that's not natural. You know, right. That's not nature. So what in a cycling female, that's natural to have the ups and downs of estradiol, the ups and downs of progesterone. Mm-hmm. They have a period which sheds off that lining, so there's no risk for uterine cancer. Like, nature is pretty perfect. Like, nature doesn't make mistakes. So you can't take what would be a cycling female's hormones and try to give that consistently, statically, to a menopausal female. Does that make sense, or can you help me clarify that?
Oh, well, I think that she's asking, now I understand where you're coming from, mm-hmm. for sure. In the context of a menopausal woman, because you're right, a perimenopausal woman that's still having a period, occasional period, an erratic period, throws a whole wrench into those gears. Okay? But if you're talking about a menopausal woman and you're deciding what is the optimal dose for her, how are you determining what that optimal dose is, for one? Are you doing that based on a blood level? Are you doing that based on symptom resolution? How are you determining what an optimal dose is? Now, we've talked about rhythmic dosing quite a bit on this podcast, probably not as much as we should have, because her question is what differentiates who uses static dosing, who uses rhythmic dosing.
Exactly.
Because mm-hmm. you cannot achieve optimal dosing in some cases on the static dosing side, especially if that woman has a uterus, mm-hmm. right? Because like you said, you got that, you know, static dose all month long and it's 125 to 150 based on whatever, you know, hormone replacement she's using, that potentially puts her at risk over time, where if you put a woman that is trying to protect her brain or bones and her heart, she's on a higher dose, rhythmic dosing. Now, as a trade-off to that, she's going to have a period every month because she has a uterus. Otherwise, she's potentially putting herself at harm if she's trying to shoot for this 100-plus number all month long. Is that what you take from that question?
That's exactly what I take. So rhythmic dosing is a different type of HRT that you basically mimic the ovarian cycle. You're changing the estradiol levels throughout that 28-day cycle, and you're starting the progesterone on day 14, as it would be in nature, and you're cycling that as well. So if you have a uterus, you have a period. Now, we're talking a lot about uterus, but there's so many other estrogen-sensitive tissues that sometimes pushing too much estrogen constantly can have an effect on.
All 30 days, like every day of the week, you know, static all the time.
So that's what static is you're taking the same exact dose every single day, all the time. No mm-hmm. breaks, no nothing. So when you're doing that and you're keeping those levels consistently high, and even no matter how much progesterone a practitioner is going to give you, for some women, that uterine lining is so sensitive to estrogen, to estradiol, that they're eventually going to get a thickening. And we've talked about that before. Yeah. And same with a lot of women, too. When they're constantly getting this estradiol, they do feel good initially. Like in the beginning, you give them a lot of estradiol. They're like, oh, I feel like I'm myself again. But eventually, those there's symptoms that start to come into play. They'll gain some weight. They can get puffy. Estrogen too high consistently can cause histamine reactions. You can get more breast density, more breast cysts. You can get ovarian cysts. Mm-hmm. You can get your fibroids reactivated. So that's why this question was so cool, and it was like a light bulb moment, because you and I think about this all the time, but I didn't think that other people, you know. Or I don't necessarily articulate it that well. So that's why I liked this question, to be able to articulate that with static dosing, your hands really are tied when you're looking at a lot of, I mean, you can still get some benefit from that bone and that brain and that heart health doing mm-hmm. static dosing.
Yeah, of course.
But you're not going to get as much as if you're doing the rhythmic dosing. And I'll be perfectly honest with that.
Yeah, because at some point with the static dosing, you reach a dosing limit, mm-hmm. right? You're on 2 milligrams. 4 milligrams, 6 milligrams, 8 milligrams, 9 milligrams, 10 milligrams. At a certain point, if that woman has a uterus, her lining is going to thicken, and she's either going to have some spotting or bleeding. At that point, you can't go any higher. You either have to back down, and giving her more progesterone probably won't work, right? So now from a dosing perspective, you're sort of stuck. And honestly, in our experience, you know, people that are asking all these questions, most of them are not over 5 milligrams. Mm-hmm. But with rhythmic dosing, you're even on the basic level of rhythmic dosing, and you're 10, 15, you know, 15 plus milligrams of estradiol, you know, on a day by day basis. But like you said, you get this rise and a fall, and a rise and a fall, mm-hmm. and a rise and a fall, which would mimic a woman's cycle. So it's the fact that the hormone levels rise and fall, and because she has a cycle every month, if she has a uterus, That's what makes it safe for her to continue. And now you're pushing that estradiol level up to, you know, the target we're shooting for is between 300 and 350. Mm-hmm. That is way higher than you're going to safely achieve on some kind of a static dose.
No, absolutely. That's why this question was so great, because you do want to have those estradiol levels mm-hmm. up, but you just don't want to have them up consistently, because that's going to create a little bit of a snafu down the road.
Yeah.
Now, some women can tolerate
it. It might not, but it could. That's a big could that could happen down the road.
Yeah, just like, you know, one thing like you had mentioned about having a transvaginal ultrasound, maybe somebody's not spotting, but you don't know if that lining's thickening up or not when they're on that static dosing. Same with, you know, I've had patients that have come to me when they were on their, you know, certain static dosing, and they'll have their mammogram and it'll say increased breast density almost, you know, which, you know, if you have breasts, you're going to have some, you know, you're going to have tissue. So having density is normal, but they're having increased density. And that's because those are those estrogen sensitive tissues, which are going to be sensitive to that estradiol all month long. Yeah. Now with the rhythmic dosing, I'll say, I do rhythmic dosing myself. I'm 52. I do the rhythmic dosing. I think this morning I put on, I think my equivalent was 4 milligrams of estradiol, because I'm on a little bit of a lower, I'm going on the lower end of my cycle, mm-hmm. and I'll put on 4 milligrams again tonight. But
so total, you're using 8 mm-hmm. milligrams, and you're on the lower end.
Yeah, once a day. Yeah,
right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
so,
and that's going to. I'll get a period because I do have a uterus. I'll get it. Usually, my period comes on day 27. So mm-hmm. I've had it on day 26. 28, but usually 27 is kind of where everybody's a little different. As long as it's between day 25 and day 30, that's really what you're aiming for. So I'm able to get those levels up so that we can have that, you know, optimal level for the bone, the brain health, the heart health. Because I will say the decline of hormones definitely increases your risk for metabolic disease.
Everything.
Heart disease.
Yeah, everything.
Inflammatory conditions, visceral fat, not to mention the osteoporosis and the dementia. Right. So I do feel like we do need those hormones to help with that. But there's also that side step too that we talk about, right? If you, let's say your hormones are, you're not having the hot flashes anymore. You're mm-hmm. having just enough biased or estradiol to take away those hot flashes. You can sleep again. You feel better. Then you're going to eat better. Then you're going to exercise more.
Yeah.
You know, so there is a little bit of a chicken and the egg there, or there's more issues around it that we can have the HRT at play, because I don't want to bag on static dosing.
No. We've been doing it for years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, it works for a lot of women, but The to her question, there's a certain point where you cannot achieve optimal dosing with static dosing, right? So if you're going for a certain blood level, there's a certain point where a woman's body, and every woman's a little different, that her body might not allow that optimal dose to be achieved.
And I think we're using the word optimal, maybe that's a little bit vague when I say,
because
it's not that it's necessarily optimal. It would be like she's saying here that a cycling female, let's say she's 32 years old, she's 30 years old, and her cycling estradiol throughout the month is consistently over 100. Sometimes usually if you test them on their period, it can be lower than 100 because they're having that sloughing of that uterine lining. But that's a cycling female.
Yep.
I wouldn't call that an optimal dose for a menopausal woman.
No.
So
yeah, I understand what you were saying earlier. Yeah, because mm-hmm. if you try to recreate that in a menopausal woman, you're just going to create a problem, right? Because the hormones need to, which is
in a static dosing,
in a static dose. Yeah, mm-hmm. that's why in the rhythmic dosing, you want that lining to build up and slough off. Otherwise, you're putting the woman at risk if she's on that consistent dose. Because women, when they're menstruating, mm-hmm. day 12 it usually peaks out, and I've seen women. Now, granted, I don't know if this is. What is the highest number you've seen for a day 12 estradiol?
For rhythmic dosing or just a cycling female?
Let's just say a cycling female, no rhythmic dosing, just a cycling female.
Now, in a cycling female that is not in perimenopause, I've seen those levels come up to 350, and that's okay. But you know what's interesting is in perimenopause, Now that progesterone is dropped and they're having sort of these erratic mm-hmm. spikes of estradiol and then dives of estradiol, as I will see in a perimenopausal female, that estradiol level can sometimes go up to 800.
Yeah,
that's on their own.
Yeah, like, right.
Wow.
With no hormones, yeah. I had one that was, she was 42, 41, 42, not having really any major perimenopausal symptoms. And her day 12, right, because if they ask what day should I go, you say, go on day 12 or day 21 just to see, because we have certain, because of the rhythmic dosing, we have some targets we're shooting for there just to see how it is. Hers was 742 on day 12, mm-hmm. right? So to her point, everything above 100 on her day 21 or closer to her period, it is probably going to still be above 100, mm-hmm. but she's building up that lining and sloughing it off. Now, your point though is in the menopause, when the FSH starts bouncing around, it starts creating those surges of estrogen.
You mean in perimenopause?
In perimenopause. Yeah. So the FSH starts going up, so it's telling the ovaries to produce these surges of estrogen, which is why you get those crazy numbers.
Yeah, exactly.
Is that what your point was?
Yeah, it's, you know, the hypothalamus is talking to the pituitary, which is talking to the ovaries. And the ovaries, you know, when it comes to perimenopause, they're kind of tired. They're okay, we're ready to not work so much. They're a little burnt out. They don't want to work anymore. So that FSH number goes up really high. And then the ovaries, because, you know, they're still there, is in perimenopause, they'll say, fine. And then they do a whole bunch of work.
Right.
So you see those levels go up to 800, 700, and then they don't do any work and it goes all the way down. So that's why perimenopause is a little bit like a moving target, because it's a little more, takes a little more finesse to be able to treat perimenopause versus menopause.
I think that's why it's been sort of ignored for so long, because it's, you know, just take birth control and you're done. Because it is challenging. There's not one way to do it for each individual woman. But now that would also probably account too when you're getting that surging estrogen. That's why when a woman is in kind of that, I know you just wrote an article the last couple of days, the in-betweeners, where they get those heavy periods right towards the end. It would more than likely be being pushed because of those surging estrogen levels.
Well, you think about if that estrogen's going up, in perimenopause, you're not making a lot of progesterone, very low, then those estrogen-sensitive tissues, like your breasts and your uterus, your ovaries, they're going to have too much estrogen, so you'll see that thickening of the lining. That's when mm-hmm. women get ablations, they get DNCs, they have hysterectomies. That's the most common time.
Yeah, but it's sort of like a normal transition. Like all those things that are happening to them are treated as problems, but it's sort of normal in some respects.
Oh.
It's just a little bit too much estrogen in that context, too much of a good thing makes it sort of run awry a little bit and start having some problems.
Of course, there's that natural, you know, we're all going to go through menopause. That's just mm-hmm. part of getting older. But I wouldn't say it was normal. If somebody is having some debilitating,
I don't mean it's normal.
Oh, okay.
It's a perimenopausal response, which mm-hmm. is why a lot of women are experiencing it.
Yeah.
Common, maybe not normal.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's where that's why I think it's so cool that perimenopause, that we're talking about it, right? We're talking about it. I remember people telling me that their doctors told them perimenopause didn't exist. Like, what is that? But it does. So, but now you can see with this question and the menoverse that there's a lot of concerns out there of what's the right dosing for women. But I also think it comes down to not what's the right dosing for women, it's what's the right dose for you.
Yeah. I think right dosing, optimal dosing, that doesn't really exist necessarily, right? That's why I find that the rhythmic dosing is very much tailored to the individual, mm-hmm. right? So that is where you achieve an optimal dose at some point for that individual, but trying to do that across everybody, that's next to impossible. And I think that's why her question, why women mm-hmm. are so confused, because you're trying to take a static dose with a couple of different dosing options and trying to turn that into something optimal. That's next to impossible, if not actually impossible, right? Because, I mean, have you, I know that with prescriptions and patients, you know, there's some overlap or there's some tendencies where women fall, but there's not one magic dose or even two or three magic doses for a group of women necessarily. There's unlimited number of doses, whatever, like you said, whatever works for them and their goals.
I mean, you and I have been working in hormone replacement for over 20 years. And I will say that we have a lot of patients and I wouldn't say everybody has the same dose. Like what one person has, somebody has a totally different dose because it's tailored for them.
Right.
So I think that's what we're kind of going into is realizing that we need to, for hormone replacement, it isn't like taking a Tylenol and your headache goes away. Mm-mm. It's more about, okay, does a half a Tylenol work for her, but three Tylenols work for her.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And that's really what you're trying to decide, right? As the practitioner, you're trying to guide them in what is the best option for them based on their history, based on what their cycles like used to be like before, what their current symptom profile is.
Family history.
Yeah. Family history, you know, genetics, and you take all those things into consideration. And then that sort of turns into, over time, it turns into an optimal dose. I don't think there is a way to say, okay, this is a dose that every woman should be on, and then that's it. I don't think it works like that.
Nope, yeah. Absolutely.
But I think out there in the, as she calls it, I love the word, the metaverse,
So cool.
Yeah, you should maybe trademark that or something. That's a
sure
good one.
It is.
I'm sure somebody did. That everyone does talk about optimal dosing, but achieving that is sort of done on an individual, person by person basis.
And then if you're doing static dosing, so I think the key here was if you're doing static dosing, you don't want to treat that female like it would be a cycling woman.
No.
Because they aren't consistently taking, you know, their bodies are meant to have the surges of the estrogen for the ovulation, and then the progesterone comes up and that lining thickens up, and then you have a period or you're pregnant. You don't want to take that scenario and put that on a menopausal female just to keep her hormones elevated unless you're doing the rhythmic dosing.
Unless.
That's where I feel like the rhythmic dosing is one of those treatments. It's not for everyone.
Nope.
But when you're thinking bones, brain, heart, you know, health, even your skin and your hair, and for libido and sex drive, I think that is a really good treatment plan overall.
Yeah. And that's where, you know, if you're talking on a long-term basis, so you're in your 50s now, you're in early menopause, an approach like that, we're talking anti-aging. That is really where you really slow down the clock as much as possible. Because if you can maintain, I mean, let's think about our pets. We got two dogs over there, ourselves. When do we really start to decline the most? For women, as you said earlier, it is really menopause. Menopause, when everything starts to become a risk, or just going into menopause itself becomes a risk. But if we had a way that we could keep those hormones sort of optimized, I'm going to use the word again, optimized, or at least propped up for as long as possible, but in a safe way, that to me seems like a really good long-term strategy. So now it's a cross-section between, and I say this to a lot of my female patients, estrogen is what makes a woman a woman. The more of it she has, the better she feels, right? So if you get to that dosing, you know, up there, but in a safe way, meaning that there's a trade-off to it. You want an estradiol level of 300, then you're going to have a period every month, right? Because you cannot have an estradiol
if you have a uterus.
Yeah, you're going to have an estradiol every month of 150 to 350 if you're not having a period. Mm-hmm. If you don't have a uterus, then it's almost best of both worlds. Your levels are still going to fluctuate, but you don't have the landmark or the event of having the period every month if you don't have a uterus.
That is true. When I have women that don't have a uterus, there is this, you can go a little bit more on that static dosing, but you still have to be careful because, you know, our breast tissue are very estrogen sensitive. I do a lot of certain supplementations and changes with lifestyle to make sure that we downregulate certain estrogen metabolites that have to go through the liver and upregulate certain metabolites. So there is a whole process when it comes to that HRT. And I do notice some women are very sensitive to estrogen. Okay, why is that? Is that a sluggish liver? Is that just genetics? You know, what is that? So you have to take that into consideration as well. So that's why I thought this question was really cool. And it made so much sense. I was like, oh my gosh, why haven't we ever talked about something like this before?
Oh, we've talked about that in roundabout sort of ways.
But she
worded it really well. And she really gets at the heart of what is it you're trying to accomplish by, you know, whatever dose. Now, one thing I will say too, when it comes to estrogen dosing, is there used to be, and we've been doing this a long time, and especially in the early days, the early, you know, 2000s, the 2010s, you know, there was still a leftover fear from the Women's Health Initiative. Everybody was, every practitioner was afraid of dosing estrogen. I still think there's a little bit of estrogen fear out there that you always want to give them the lowest dose possible to achieve something. But you know, that's just, you just can't do that when you're on those lower levels. It's just not really possible. Mm-hmm. So I think that with conversations like this, with, you know, there in the metaverse, I think that it's changing, but at the same time, you also want to keep yourself safe. Mm-hmm. Being on that, you know, on a certain dose and your blood level is 150 plus for years and years and years, you're not going to get uterine cancer in 3 months, but, you know, 3 to 5 to 10 years later, that, you know, that's why I thought one of the episodes we did, I think it might've been the same one she commented on, or one of the other ones, we were talking about how my patient's sister in Italy, they require an annual transvaginal ultrasound, right? That's how you know on static dosing if what you're giving someone is actually causing more potential problems down the road than not.
Truly, truly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. This a good question.
Really good question. No, I appreciate this. Anybody that does comments, please, you know, we read them. We do.
Yeah.
And I write them down. Like I because I love to write, I'm like, oh, I just love this. So I actually wrote it down word for word.
Well, I actually forgot to print it up. Usually I put it on a piece of paper.
To put so it in my head.
You can read it. But yeah, I thought her question was very good. And she looks like she listens to our videos. So hopefully this isn't too confusing. Hopefully this sort of makes a little bit of sense. But, you know, it does add to complexity to why women are a little confused, because there's just not one size fits all. It's really a really complicated scenario. Any final comments about that? Anything else to say?
No, this was great. Thank you for your comments. I appreciate it.
Okay. Until next time, I'm Dr. Mackey.
And I'm Dr. Valerie.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.